Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
The world has changed. It's a new world. It's a new world order. First of all, we won the election. I don't live every day now fearing that the NSA is spying on me or that the FBI is going to throw a black bag over my head and take me away one night. Do you know that I actually lived in that fear under the regime of Obama? And they're not gone yet. These fascists who are disguised as good liberal progressives are still in power. And they still frighten me, by the way. Every last one of them belonged in the ex-Soviet Union. And they're not going anywhere. That's my fear. I remember when Trump won that night. The next day I woke up, I looked at the sky. The sky looked as though it had opened up. The sky looked clear. It looked. A friend of mine said, it's as though a portal to another world had opened up for all of us. We were no longer living in this closed world that this monster in the White House had created in this free nation. This interloper, this phony, this monster, what he had done to this nation. He had created the greatest spy apparatus the world had ever seen, and he gets away with it with that sick smile of his, hiding behind his wife and children, the nice guy Obama, and the rats in the media like Wolf Blitzer say nothing. You don't know the rage I have for them. You don't know what I would do if I had the power. You don't know what I would do if I had the power. You have no idea. And that's why I made a decision many years ago, because I have such rage against the machine that I would stay where I am. Even if I had the opportunity to inveigle my way into a government, I would not want that power, because I would probably use it like a hammer on an anvil to get even with these people and what they've done to this fine country. That's how I feel about it. So I'm glad I have no power. I'm glad I am only a voice on the outside looking in. I'm one of the outraged Eddies out there. Let me tell you, I'm not that happy today, but I feel differently today about the country. I don't walk around fearing that it's all coming to an end. I don't walk around looking at little white children, to be honest with you, seeing future slaves anymore. Did you know that? Did you know that that's what I used to see? I'd walk around and look at little white children, I'd shake my head and I'd say, if this doesn't stop, these children will be slaves in their own nation. Take a look at what they're doing to the kids at the campuses. Look what they're doing to your beautiful baby when they get into college. Look what they're doing to them if they happen to have been born as Caucasian. Look at the evil communists and their indoctrination and what they do to them every day with lies about white privilege. The brainwashing is a form of psychological warfare to make them hate themselves for being themselves. That's what they've done to your children in this country. Now, the academic bureaucrats have to be purged in this nation. Yeah, that's right, you heard me. It's going to take a long time, a very long time, until the climate of the culture of this nation is finally changed. But change it must for this country to survive. But the fact of the matter is, I wrote about Mattis a couple of years ago. It was in October of 2014 that I published a book entitled Stop the Coming Civil War. I was raising the red flags about Obama, how he had purged more than 200 U.S. military officers at the rank of colonel or higher since he became president. In 2009, he had fired over 200 U.S. military officers, replacing them with useless puppets. And one of those fired by this communist president of ours, this Castroite, was General James Mattis. Who is James Mattis? First of all, he's a great Marine. He's the former head of CENTCOM. In January 2013, Castro's cousin, Fidel Obama, dismissed Mattis, the general, for being too much of a hawk, especially when it came to the administration's lenient policy toward Iran. The fact of the matter is, Mattis understood how dangerous a nuclear-armed Iran would be to our allies and to U.S. interests in the Middle East, and he was not afraid to speak out. Mattis, who once famously said, quote, and I can't say the whole sentence here, it's on page 61 of the book, He said there are some AHs in the world who just need to be shot. And he was known among his peers as someone who could defend the military in its ongoing dialogue with government functionaries. Both soldiers and civilians respected the general, and he wasn't about to kowtow to anyone. He was exactly the type of commander that Obama both shrinks from and does all he can to remove. Why do you think Obama removed Mattis? You have an idea why he threw him out? The general had received a note from one of his own aides telling him he was being replaced as the head of Central Command. Not one of the low-life weakling stooges from the Pentagon or the communist White House was gracious enough to inform him about this. I can relate to that. That's what they do to big men. I've seen it happen in my own life just recently. They're afraid of men like us. And so the sneaks in the night have underlings do it for them. But then eventually the men like me come back to the surface, and the underlings run like the cockroaches they are when the light is shown upon their behavior. Others fired were two of our top nuclear commanders, Major General Michael Carey, Vice Admiral Tim Giardina. Both left the armed forces within days of each other, both because of personal misconduct, according to reports and emails leaked to the press. They were not even given a trial. The girls around Obama, the girls he put uniforms on, the fake tin warriors that Obama put into the Pentagon did this to them. The official report on General Carey's dismissal says this. They said that while on temporary assignment in Moscow, the general went on a vodka-drinking binge one night, and he needed assistance standing at one point. Can you believe this? And he had tried to get up on stage with a Beatles cover band in a Mexican restaurant in Moscow. And that was the reason to fire a combat general? Yes, if you're one of the cowards in a uniform who really belongs as an usher in a movie theater. Do you know who this man was? And do you know why he was really fired? I have it all for you on the Savage Nation, because maybe we have hope to restore our military after this communist regime is finally thrown out of office. Do you know who this man was, General Michael Carey? The man who was thrown out for drinking vodka and dancing on a stage? At the time he was fired by the girls in the band, he was commander of the 20th Air Force, responsible for all 450 of the Air Force's Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missiles located in five U.S. states. You know who else he is? Prior to that, General Carey actually served in both the Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom operations. He was also the recipient of no fewer than 13 major military awards and decorations. And the vermin in Obama's Defense Department, the fakers in uniform, threw him out. Carey is an American hero, and yet he was relieved of duty for drinking vodka in Russia. Was it not possible for the Air Force to provide an officer with Carey's credentials some sort of rehabilitation for the alleged alcohol problems instead of firing him? I hope that Donald Trump and General Mattis get together and bring back General Michael Carey next. But now I'll go to the next one. Who else did the communist president fire? Chim Giardina. Now, all of this has been lost by you. Most of you don't know this, but I remember everything. I record everything. I absorb everything. I sort everything. And I put it into my books. So let me read what else you need to know about Giardia. Scorched Earth took it from here. Charges against Vice Admiral Giardina were no less fantastic. Do you know who he is? Fired by the cretin in the White House? Giardina was a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, a three-star admiral, who was the former deputy commander-in-chief and staff of the Pacific Fleet. Now, I wrote, you'd think that if you were going to relieve someone of this stature of his command and reassign him to a desk job, you'd come up with serious charges related to the performance of his duty. But in a move that had to be approved by the president, the sneak himself, Giardina was demoted for having played poker with counterfeit $100 chips in the Horseshoe Casino in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Now, that was never proven, by the way. That's number one. In other words, both of these commanders who have outstanding military records and who have risen to the tops of their commands were dismissed on charges that, in my opinion, would likely have gotten an enlisted man no more than a slap on the wrist. or let us say one of the girls he put into office. Do you know who the Secretary of the Navy is? Do you know the Secretary of the Air Force has never flown an airplane? Do you know that? One commentator described it this way. This move is exceedingly rare and perhaps unprecedented in the history of U.S. Strategic Command, which is responsible for all U.S. nuclear warfighting forces, including nuclear-armed submarines, bombers, and land-based missiles. So why did Obama purge them? I have the other names of the military men who may be coming back to defend this great nation now that we have swept out or will soon sweep out these turncoat rats that Obama has put in. But Donald Trump is going to need our help every step of the way. Thank God he started at the top and he put Mattis back where he belongs and let him go after the internal enemies first. That's the only way we will survive. He must purge the military of the KGB-like operatives that Obama planted in every avenue of our armed forces. It's good that Trump is appointing some great men. I'm 100% for it. That will have immediate effects where it's needed. And of course, I said before the election, if he wins, my number one priority would be national security. I said that to you over and over again. Well, that's where Trump's going. Why did he do it? Because he listened to me? No, because it's commonsensical. Obama and his Castro-white minions have so denuded the military, have so implanted vermin in all the intelligence services, that this country is sitting like a vulnerable infant. He's empowered our enemies. Who are our enemies? You mean Iran is our friend? Where did the $175 billion that your great man Obama gave Iran, where did that cash come from? Why has there been no accounting? Where was the money hidden? Who keeps $175 billion in cash laying around? Did they print it? Was it hidden? Is it a slush fund? Where did it come from? Why are there no answers to this question? And while you're answering that question about this great president of ours, where did he get the money to just buy three houses? We read just last week. I was shocked to find out that he bought a beautiful home in an expensive district in Washington, D.C., bought another one in his beloved Hawaii, and he bought another one, I don't remember anymore where it is. Three houses, I said? I didn't see any deals coming through. Where did the money come from that he had the money to buy these three houses, I asked. Look what the rats are doing. They're flooding America with as many people as they can who have absolutely no value whatsoever to this nation. You know, I keep hearing that immigrants are the backbone of America. I keep hearing that they do the jobs that Americans won't do. Then why is he bringing in 15-year-old girls with babies? Why is he bringing in Muslims with six children? Why is it that the immigrants have a much higher use of the welfare system than do indigenous people or the natives of this country? I mean, if you can answer those questions, you'll come to understand that virtual criminals are running the nation. And they're not just ordinary criminals who are doing this for personal gain, although there is tremendous amount of personal gain in flooding the country with immigrants. Catholic Charities, $2.5 billion last year, ripped off out of the tax base. Lutheran Family Services. These are all criminal organizations, in my opinion. What, because the word Catholic is in front of it? It couldn't be run by a bunch of thieves? Take a look at their salaries. Ask yourself, why the hell are we spending $2 billion on Catholic charities? And what have they given us? Oh, wait a minute. I remember what they gave us. Why, that young fellow the other day in Ohio, he was brought in with his five Muslim brethren from Somalia. And, oh yeah, it was Catholic Charities that put him in Columbus, Ohio. Then why hasn't Catholic Charities been sued by the victims who he ran over and knifed? The answer is because I'm not a lawyer. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Can't take my mind off what my mind is really on. You understand what I'm saying? So if my mind is only on this, how can I talk about anything else? I personally believe, and I'll say it the way it is, that Trump winning this election by hook or by crook, there was God's hand involved in it. Does that mean Trump is a prophet? No. But God saved America at the last minute. He saved us, as sure as I am sitting here, from this bunch of atheistic, anti-American vermin who have tried to destroy us from within. That's correct. That's exactly what happened. And you know, sometimes God chooses odd people to do his bidding. Look at the story. Look at the story of him choosing Moses. Moses, he was said, I'm choosing you. You're the chosen one to lead your people. He says, ah, come on, don't pick on me. He said, I don't want to do this, Moses said. I can't do it, he said. I stutter. I'm not good looking. I have like a bad face. My skin is no good. No, pick someone else. God says, that's why I'm choosing you, because you're imperfect. So if you look at that statement, and then you look within yourself, you realize that you yourself can have been chosen for things on this earth. No matter how humble you may be, you could be chosen to do something that's great. You may have already seen that. You see, the people who were chosen by God or by fate or by destiny to do wonderful things often don't even know they've been chosen to do so. And I've told you these stories before, and they resonate in me at times, and perhaps times like this. But I truly believe that America is saved. I think that we're only seeing the beginning of the salvation. I believe that once the rats are forced out of the White House, once the rats are purged out of the media, and believe me, make no mistake about it, the vermin behind the rats that you see in the media, they're businessmen and businesswomen at the end of the day. They're business people. If they see that as a result of the left-wing fanaticism, their listenership has collapsed, they're going to start reaching out to people on the other side who represent the 51% of America that they've spit on for the last 10 years. They've been spitting on you. They said you're nobody, you're nothing, you don't go to the movies, you don't watch television, you don't buy books, you don't read this, you don't read that. But they found out you actually exist. And at some point, the boards of directors of these media giants are going to make certain that they talk to you with respect. And then voices like mine will be heard across the land. You will start hear voices like mine. They will start appearing on some of the most unexpected outlets you could ever imagine. And the only reason is because the rats behind the scenes are business people, and all they want is the bottom line. And they finally awakened to the fact that they were spitting on 50% of America, laughing at you, mocking you, calling you every name under the sun. The deplorables, the despicables, the rube, the breeder. But you actually are the backbone of America. And now you have a leadership. And it's only just begun. I mean, he's not even in office yet. One of the things I'm doing for my book, In Reverence of God, is I'm going through my Old Testament, which I've had for 40 years, with all the post-its in it. So I started at the beginning. And I found the section right in the beginning of Genesis where he talks about man and woman in Genesis. And he writes this, he, God, you know who he is, God. It's not Obama. He, not Obama. It's not Castro. It's not Stalin. It's not Lenin. Not any of your heroes. Not Karl Marx. Not George Soros. But he, God. He, God, wrote the Bible, and it starts with Genesis, the first book of Moses, so to speak. And in it, in Chapter 2, verse 18, he says, And the Lord God said, It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him. And then it talks about how he created all of the other animals and what he would call them. He gave names to the cattle and the fowl of the air and to every beast of the field. And then he looks around and he says, But for Adam, there was not found a helpmeet for him. And so the God, the great God, caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the place with flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from the man made he a woman, and brought her unto the man, and the man said, This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Now listen to the rest of this. Listen to it as poetry. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. I could spend an entire book on that one piece of Genesis. But I don't think it takes an entire book to understand that since the beginning of recorded history, all religions have recognized that it's man and woman, that there's no need for a third sex bathroom. You have mental problems. You're not sure who you are. We're sorry for you. We're not going to hurt you. We accept you. But please don't twist our children's minds. Every culture, every religion, every people on the planet, every dog, every cat, every mouse, every bird, every pigeon, everything on earth understands that, except the people in San Francisco. So as I read a thing like that, I look further, and I was reading something that really moved me. I mean, I got to tell you, this moved me a lot. I didn't even intend to do this now, but I'm so tired of everything else. And that's usually when I turn to the Rock of Ages. It's not that I believe every word. I mean, I'm not a biblical absolutist. But when you look at some of this and you realize it's been around for thousands of years. Of course, everyone is not as smart as Mark Zuckerberg. I understand that. The poor people who believed in God and the Bible all these years, they just didn't have the brains of Barack Obama and the other atheists around him. But they did the best they could. When you look at things which have metaphorical power, for example, Sodom and Gomorrah. We know what Sodom and Gomorrah is. Everybody knows what that is. Then the Lord caused rain upon Sodom and Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him and she became a pillar of salt. So that from that biblical phrase came the statement, don't look back. Remember the Bob Dylan song, movie, Don't Look Back. So I'm impressed with how much great literature is based upon biblical stories, for example, or biblical truths, if you want to put it that way. Why is it that when I read this at dawn, I actually got I know it sounds, you know, suspiciously false. I got, like, weirdly teary reading this about the East of Eden part. I can't put my hand on it. I wish I could. And it moved me because of the power of the words of the Bible. When you think about the three great religions on earth, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they're three religions that are originally tied by one common thread called monotheism, the belief in a single God. Forget about the Wahhabists who have infected Islam. Forget about the fact that Saudi Arabia has poisoned Islam for the moment. But if you look at the purity of Islam and you denude Islam of its hatred and you denude it of the killing and the murdering of infidels, if you can do that, and you pray to God that those they're bringing in don't practice a literal form of Islam, there's so much beauty in these religions and they all come from the same source, which is the belief in God. KSFO, Dan, line 3, what's on your mind? Dan, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I see a beautiful parallel, Michael, between your 22 years in radio and your upcoming God book and the Bible. You know, for 22 years, you were like the Old Testament prophet, warning the people about the dangers of liberalism that culminated in scorched earth. As we started to enter a new dispensation, that's about the time you saw Hacksaw Ridge and the hero Desmond Doss. And you saw that the Rock of Ages in his heart made him a courageous man. And I think as you then led things along into this Trump era, you were kind of like John the Baptist who said, he must become greater, I must become less. And you brought Trump on your show. You were really helping people to see his policies of freedom. The media, of course, crucified him. They counted him dead, but he rose on November 8th. And it's interesting that you had a friend who said, it's like we've entered through a portal into a new world. And it reminded me, Michael, of the movie The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where the children went through the wardrobe. And like the agnostic, he seems to be approaching the wardrobe. And you have led this now, I think, and God has used you. But now that we're in this era, I kind of see, Michael, that your role now almost is more like a New Testament pastor than an Old Testament prophet, in the sense that what do you do when, you know, the folks are out of Egypt, when we've been delivered from liberalism? And I love it when you talk about, like, Cincinnati last night and Mad Dog, and, you know, we got Tom Price and HHS now, a lot of positive things that you're building the people up. And I think just as you were a tremendous prophet, Michael, I think you're going to be a great encourager of your listeners. And it'll be very interesting to see your God book, Michael, because I think this whole thing could culminate. I think the movie Hacksaw Ridge and Rock of Ages holds the key here going forward, but I know that God has used you in a powerful way, and I think there's just a beautiful parallel here, and I really got to commend you, Michael, because in a lot of ways, you must have had PTSD after 22 years on the front lines, but now as you've started to kind of move into this chaplain pastoral role, I think it took you a few days to come out of that. I think it took you a few days to put the gun down and realize, hey, you know, we won, we don't need to keep shooting. You know, this is an imperfect political leader, but, you know, he's not the King of Kings, but, you know, God's going to use him to help bring freedom to our country. So we thank you, Michael, for the way you've been used, and I just see this beautiful parallel going on. And it's amazing how God puts all these things in your life, like Hacksaw Ridge and all of this, and it just matches so much of the Bible. I can't wait to read your new book, The God Book.
Wow. I got to say, I got to applaud you. You are loquacious, my listener friend. And I got to tell you, are you in the religious business, Dan?
Yeah, I've been a pastor for 26 years. I've been a pastor for 10 years at Wellspring Church here in Papillion, Nebraska. And so, you know, I've had the pleasure, Michael, of
serving. Oh, that's amazing what you just said. Your flock must love you.
Well, we're blessed. My wife and I, we've married 26 years. We're blessed with a wonderful congregation here. And, you know, but I got to tell you, Michael, there are few people in any aspects of society today that tell it with the sincerity and the truth that you do. And so I just so appreciate your work. And like I said, I see so much of a comparison in the spiritual realm to what's going on. And so I appreciate that.
Wow. All I can say is I'm thankful that you called, because what you said sort of summarizes a lot of things in my life and where I have been and where I'm going and where I'm at. And I think that, like all men, I'm always asking myself what's ahead and where should I go. And I don't have an answer to that distinctly right now. I'll be honest with you. I feel that I've done my job. Some mornings I wake up and I feel like a salmon who has swum upstream and there's nothing left to do. And I feel that I have done the biggest thing I could possibly do in my life, and there's nothing left to do. I must tell you that. And it's not like I get scared. It's like, oh, now I'm going to die on the spot. I don't have that childish view of things. But I do feel that spiritually, politically, I feel that I've done all I can possibly do. There's nowhere to go now. What else is there to do? Tell me what else is there for me to do.
Well, I tell you, Michael, here's what you do, my brother, and that is you're like the disciples after Christ was crucified. You're confused, you're dazed, you had no idea that was coming. But when Pentecost came and that power came, the same power that filled Desmond Doss and Hacksaw Ridge, that's going to be the power that's going to equip you to then shepherd your flock of listeners forward. Because, of course, who would know what to do in your situation? You've been an Old Testament prophet, you know, for 22 years. How do you go from being a prophet where you're you know, denouncing the dangers of liberalism and all of the plagues that that brings, and now all of a sudden having a flock of people who've been delivered out of Egypt and now have got, you know, all of this stuff they want to celebrate. And so I have no doubt, Mike, you're going to make that transition. And, you know, I would be honored any time to, you know, just visit with you on the phone. And I certainly don't have all the...
That's beautiful. I got to tell you, that's a beautiful call and a wonderful offering. And we will talk again. I will tell you why. Well, there's a number of reasons why. Number one, I told you that I also have an astrologer friend. Remember I told you about it after L.A.? He visited me in my home. Did I tell you? Did you hear that on the radio?
Absolutely heard that. In fact, I thought it was interesting that you saw him over Thanksgiving, because I kind of tied in a little bit, Michael. I couldn't figure out, you know, why you were getting so upset about the Priebus and all that stuff. But again, I think you had PTSD. I think it was hard for you to come out of that. So I did hear...
No, it was not PTSD. It was RNC PD. I mean, whatever. It was RNC PD, because I've been through that before. I've seen them screw the American people before. I saw what McConnell has done. I saw what Boehner has done to us. No, there was no PTSD. It was RNCSD, because they have done it to us before, and I don't want them to be allowed to do it again. And if I have to be, again, the only one out there willing to stand up and take the chance of having the Donald Trump camp reject me, cast me out into Lod from Eden, I have to live with that. So if I'm going to live in Nod, I'll live in Nod. I've lived here my whole life. I'll stay here. I didn't expect to be invited into the Garden of Eden for supporting Donald Trump. And if I'm cast out because I dare criticize Rince Priebus and the RNC, so be it. I've wandered in the desert. I'll continue to wander in the desert. It's that simple. I mean, I don't want them to do it to us again and think that they can get away with it and we're not going to do anything. There are millions of us who will do something. And that's what I want everyone to understand. Our battle is just beginning right now. Thank God he appointed Mattis. I love that he took Mattis out of retirement and he's going to really scare hell out of you-know-who. And that the liberals are going to run like rats off a ship out of the military. Maybe he'll reappoint all the people in the military who Obama purged in his Stalinist way. Yeah, no, so there's very good things out there. But what's the worst that's going to happen? Let me ask you something. What did I expect for having backed Trump? I didn't expect anything. I didn't want a job. I don't want a job. I can't work in a bureaucracy. I'm not moving anywhere. This is what I'm meant to do, which is broadcast and to write books. So the umbrella that I bought will be auctioned off on eBay one day. It will not go to the inauguration. I'll auction it off and give the money away to a charity. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. I'm in a weird mood, so you'll have to just bear with me. If you've lived with me for 22 years on the radio, you know I go in and out of these phases. So I'm in one of them. I'm in a trough right now. It's like the election is over. Trump won. He appointed Mattis, which is so great. That I feel that he can save the world if he just stays on that path and doesn't listen to the RNC and the contractors, you know? So again, I want to say something about this. Like, so I'm reading Exodus in the Bible. If you put the Jewish part aside for 1 minute, just listen to this. So it says, moreover, this is God speaking, it says, moreover, you shall provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating unjust gain, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. That's a beautiful statement. Able men such as fear God, men of truth, hating unjust gain. Isn't that what we want in a leader? Isn't that what we were praying for, that we'd get rid of the cretin in the White House? This corrupt man in the White House? You say, well, no, Obama's not corrupt. He didn't self-gain, did he? Really? She didn't abuse Air Force 1, 2, 3 with her trips? The mother-in-law in the White House for all these years? What'd that cost us? So that's petty compared to the other stuff. I understand that. How about the unjust gain of steering contracts to all the people in the gangster solar panel business who have provided very low wattage for very high price? How about that? How's that for corruption? Hating unjust gain. Now, do I think it's all going to end on the Trump? Absolutely not. I think it may get worse. If the RNC gets their hands on the government again, which looks like they did, they're gonna roll in the gold like pigs roll in you know what. We know what the Republican machine is like. They're like pigs in mud. So we have a big, big job ahead of us. We may have an able man in the military in Mattis. But boy, do we need an able man everywhere else that you turn. I suppose that Mr. Trump worked a deal out with the RNC, saying, okay, they get to pick commerce, they get to pick this, he gets to pick defense. Maybe that's how they worked it out. He did write the book called The Art of the Deal, didn't he? And isn't everything a compromise? And isn't politics, by definition, a system where compromise is the norm rather than the exception? Of course it is. So they're trading it off. Trump is holding for himself, I think, the most important appointments. And to me, number one is military, after what we've suffered through here for these years under the sorority. But going back again, just for one other biblical thing today, because my head was there. I can't get it out of my head right now. I was looking at East of Eden. So I was saying, well, what do you mean East of Eden? We all know, every person out there, even the most uneducated person, heard of the Garden of Eden. You take the most uneducated person you could think of, and you say the Garden of Eden, they would know what you're talking about. So everyone knows what the Garden of Eden is. The minute you say it, they get an image, right? I mean, I guess it means different things to different people. But then there is another place called East of Eden, referenced in the Bible, which is the land of Nod, N-O-D. So then you say, what do you mean Nod? That's funny, because junkies say he nodded out, right? Or you want to nod off. Where does the word Nod come from? How does that refer to someone nodding off or nodding out, N-O-D? Well, Bible, Hebrew Bible, Book of Genesis says that there's a place called on the East of Eden where Cain was exiled by God after Cain had murdered his brother Abel. He's sent to this place out of the Garden of Eden to a place called Nod. And says Genesis 4, 16. And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. So what does that mean, the land of Nod? Nod is the Hebrew root of the verb to wander. So if you live in the land of Nod, that means you are a wandering person. You're basically a cast-off. The wandering Jew lives in Nod. And of course, the colloquial meaning of the word is nod in English, to fall asleep, to nod off. But if you say, hey, that person's going to the land of Nod, that means they're going to sleep. Just a little stuff like that. Genesis 4:17 says that after arriving to land of Nod, Cain's wife bore him a son, Enoch, in whose name he built the first city, E-N-O-C-H. It's fascinating to me, that's all. Place his name after the land of Nod. Popular culture references.
Seven. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You know what's on my mind? It's already December, right? We got to December without knowing it. Here we are. The holidays are upon us. We already had the wonderful family event. Many of you had a good time. Some of you had family time, which was not very good. And these are very stressful times. It's well known amongst psychologists that these are about the most stressful times for many people in America. Not only because they have to be with people they despise, mainly members of their family who they never see. They're thrown like in an obscure way into a room with people they have nothing in common with except DNA. And so the politics don't match. Nothing matches. And it's very uncomfortable for most people unless they're a close-knit family that live near each other and, you know, somewhereville. And it still exists, I guess. But that's one stress. And the other stress, it's in a big one, a very big one, is the issue of being alone during the holidays. See, a lot of Americans have no families. They've moved away because they were marching to a different drummer. And because they marched to a different drummer and they were so wild and free and they moved to Berkeley that they have nobody to be with around these holidays. So they use more drugs than normal. Let's say on a normal day they use one line, now they use three. Or let's say they hit the crack pipe once a week, now they hit it five times a week. Or let's say they're a sex addict, instead of random sex with strangers once a week, it's five times a week around the holidays and double on Christmas Eve. And so all the addictions are now flaring to the surface. And as the days of December increase in number, and again, family time, and it freaks a lot of people out, so they revert to their addictions, whether it be alcohol, whether it be drugs or sexuality. And I touched on sex addiction. It was a very interesting show. I know many people enjoyed it, and they enjoyed it because they like hearing other people who are crazier than them. The reason that they like stories about addiction and having people call about addiction is because they feel more stable. And so the reason I talked about sex addiction yesterday was because Anthony Weiner, remember him? Huma Abedin, vaguely remember? Huma Abedin. Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's number one aide, is married to a certifiable maniac, Anthony Weiner, who can't keep his hands off his you-know-what. And so he was sent to, instead of being sent to prison and their child taken away from them, as would happen to you, if you're a man and you are seen in a picture that you took of yourself on a phone, touching yourself in underwear while your child is next to you, you go to jail for 30 years and your child's taken away. But because he's connected to the authorities in New York and the federal government, nothing happened to him. So he's back home after rehab. And I say to myself, wait a minute, they sent him to rehab in Tennessee? And what was the rehab for sex addiction? He rode a horse and he took long walks in the woods. You hear him talk to other people with the same problem, day and night indulging himself. Probably cost $30,000 a day. I don't know what it costs, a thing like this. But you know he's not cured. And my allegation was that treatment doesn't work anyway. By and large, treatment does not work for addictions. The only thing that works for addictions, and I said it, is a person who says to themselves, I'm a disgusting piece of garbage, and I'm going to stop doing this. In other words, only when you get disgusted with yourself and you hate yourself enough will you change. Nothing else will change you. No, all the rehab in the world is nonsense. It's a money mill. So I invited people who were addicts to call the show. I thought that the sex addict calls were quite good. And again, I invite you, if you want to share your story, maybe you'll help someone else. Or maybe you just want to publicly shame yourself. Some people called and said they're calling. I said, why would you call a national show when your wife doesn't know that you're a sex addict? And a guy would say, I don't even know why I'm calling. I said, come on, you're probably pulling my leg. It's a fake call. You don't know if people just want to be on the radio and hear their voice, or it's somebody, you know, in the business trying to get on. Who knows? But I think it can be enlightening, and I also think it can be entertaining, and I also think that maybe it'll help people understand that they're not alone, that part of the human condition is to be flawed, and that we're all flawed, and to one degree or another, we're all broken creatures, and to one degree or another, we're all freaking out around holidays. We know we're supposed to feel great, and many of us don't. We feel worse than we normally do. You walk around the malls and everyone with the bells and the dingling and the stores and the running and the shopping. And for a moment, maybe there's a little high on the shopping. I went to a mall the other day and there was the Salvation Army guy, gave him a $5 bill. I felt good giving me a fiver. I wanted to put it in his hand rather than the bucket. I could hardly get the fiver into the bucket, by the way. A little advice to the Salvation Army people, make the slits a little bigger. But nevertheless, I felt bad for the guy. You know, the Salvation Army, out of all the organizations, is the only one that I think does any real good. So far as I know, the Salvation Army is not like Catholic Charities. They're not bringing in Muslims from Syria. So far as I know, the Salvation Army is not like Lutheran Family Services or Jewish Family Services, which are front groups for immigration mafioso, fundamentally, in my estimation. So I put a fiber in it. Big deal. I'm going to go to heaven for it. No. He said, thank you. No one else put a dime in his cup. Why is it no one gives them any money? What is wrong with people? Why are they so cheap? They'd rather go buy a cappuccino for $5? You know, these are reformed alcoholics and drug addicts in those places. And the fact is people suffer greatly from their addictions. And now in America, with the legalization of marijuana, which is the greatest mistake the nation has ever made, because I've said to you before, marijuana is one of the most toxic drugs on the planet. It is a gateway drug, and since it is largely legalized, the weak people who are going to be getting marijuana as much as they want are going to need a bigger kick, so they're going to go to harder drugs. They're going to use more cocaine, they're going to use more crack cocaine, they're going to use fentanyl, they're going to use street drugs, because marijuana is no longer the wild, crazy drug it once was. Here's the thing, I don't want to see people in prison for smoking marijuana. But I don't want to see people thinking that marijuana is a benign or harmless drug. There's an idiot called Jesse Ventura. You may remember him. Remember Jesse Ventura? He sounds deranged. He has a show on an unknown television channel owned by Russia. I saw it last night. He was pushing marijuana like it was the greatest thing on the planet. I don't understand how people don't understand. The toxicants in marijuana smoke are more dangerous than those in cigarette smoke. How do they not know that? Just from the medical point of view, toxins are more abundant in marijuana than in tobacco. It's been studied over and over again. Ammonia levels 20 times higher in dope. Hydrogen cyanide, HCN. Nitrogen-related chemicals 3 to 5 times higher in dope than in tobacco. The fertilizer used in the marijuana plants, nitrogen-based fertilizer, could have affected the results. That is true. There are certain factors that have to be looked at. But even though marijuana does not contain nicotine and tobacco does not contain cannabinoids, which include THC, marijuana's active ingredient, tobacco, we know, has long been linked to cancer and other health problems. And we know that marijuana smoke per se has not been tied to cancer in the past. However, does it make sense to you to inhale hot smoke into your lungs and not to expect damage done to your lungs? So now the next question is, no, you may say, okay, that's reasonable. I won't smoke marijuana. I'll just ingest it in a brownie. All right, so you're going to ingest it in a brownie. So you're ingesting it to get high, not to cure a disease, right? I mean, if you just wanted to use the active ingredients that alleviate arthritis or multiple sclerosis or any of the other conditions that the people are using it for, why do you need to get high? Why do you need to be addicted to the high as opposed to just using the active principles in marijuana that could help your illness. See, so there's a connection between the getting high here that I don't like, because I think getting high is extremely dangerous in a population in that it tends to make people stupider, not smarter. When you walk around stoned all the time, you start thinking as they do in San Francisco, or the way they think in Berkeley, and they accept virtually anything except nationalism or love for nation. Everything else is acceptable to people who are high all the time. And so it's a very dangerous thing to do, is to be high all the time on something. And to me, the most the best high, by the way, is being straight. That's the highest high there is. It's the toughest one to achieve on a regular basis. It's not the one that's glorified by Harvey Weinstein or Katzenberg, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, and Ratzenberg. I understand that. But fundamentally, all these movies, every movie today shows a pretty Hollywood slut with a marijuana cigarette after having sex with some fake guy. You know, fake guy, fake girl, having fake sex, smoking fake marijuana, and then having a fake cigarette. And you wonder why children are confused. I'm not confused as to why the children are confused. I know why they're confused. But look, I don't want to see people in prison for smoking marijuana. And I got to tell you again, I speak from personal experience and as a trained scientist with some background in phytochemistry. So I know what I'm talking about, but you don't have to be a genius to go look it up. Look up toxins in marijuana smoke. See what you can find on your own. I think you'd be quite surprised to find out that marijuana is perhaps the most dangerous thing you could put in your body, next to cyanide itself. I don't know why you'd want to do it, but okay, if you want to kill yourself, don't say I didn't warn you. And you know and I know that even though you're using marijuana regularly, let's say, and it's legal now everywhere, most everywhere, you know and I know that because it's largely legalized, you're going to need a bigger kick, and that you're going to start going for the harder drugs as a result. You know it and I know it. It's just the way of human life. But I'd rather not get stuck on the marijuana thing, because if you want to look up toxicants in marijuana, you can do it on your own. And if you don't want to believe it, you don't want to read the research and accept it, I can't help you. There's nothing I can do about that. I love December, but what can I tell you? Like endless stupid shopping. People throw the gifts in the garbage or return them. But that's the society we live in. You know, conspicuous consumption, worthless gifts. I'm not a communist, don't get me wrong. I don't want to walk around with a blue uniform, you know, like in North Korea for the rest of my life. Although, there's a certain beauty in not having to, you know, think about your clothing every day. But, all right, that's what people do. Look, as a former anthropologist, there are rituals in all societies. I remember when I was studying the New Guinea Highlanders, and I'm talking a long time ago. Today, they're not like New Guinea Highlanders anymore because of the advent of visitors and television. They're not like they were. But New Guinea Highlanders would have once a year a pig festival. All year long they would raise the pigs in the village. The whole year they wouldn't slaughter one of them. And then one day, over a weekend, a couple of days, they'd kill every pig in the village and eat the pig meat and just eat. That was what they did. That's what I see when I walk around a mall. I chuckle to myself and I say, well, I guess they're slaughtering the pigs here in America now. So it's cultural. And as a cultural relativist, meaning I've seen so many different cultures in my travels, in my reading, in my life, you know, I accept almost anything. I almost accept all human behaviors if they don't bother anybody else. They don't bother children. They don't bother the next guy. I don't care what people do, to be honest with you. It's like, do I sit in judgment? Of course I do. So do you. You sit in judgment of me, most of you. You're sitting listening to me. Are you critically listening to me? Of course you are. If you like me, you're listening to me critically to see if I make sense. If you don't like me, you're looking for me to fall off the high wire and kill myself. So you're all judgmental, especially you liberal phonies. You're the most judgmental people on the planet. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. There's a judge in San Francisco who just had to explain why 66,000 arrest warrants were thrown in the garbage. A so-called chief judge of San Francisco, which is a laughingstock, said he and his legal eagle colleagues threw away 66,000 arrest warrants for quality of life crimes such as sleeping on the sidewalk, What else did they do? Being drunk in public. Oh, urinating on sidewalks. They threw them in the garbage. And that's because the judge, John Stewart, the good liberal, defended the court's action Tuesday by saying, you're putting somebody in jail because they're poor and can't pay a fine. We got a lot of criticism, but we thought it was the right thing to do. My friends, are you listening to what I just said? Did you hear what I just said to you? That they've thrown these tickets in the garbage for people who've urinated on the streets, who have slept on the sidewalk. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Well, I'll make it another, I'll put it another way. There's an article in today's Rag in the local Bay Area, county by county look at the Bay Area voting for Donald Trump. They think it's a joke, okay? So guess what came out of the look at the nine counties around San Francisco? Well, of course, the majority voted for the loser, Hillary Clinton. Well, that we know. That you can pretty much figure out. But what you may not know is that the crackpot Jill Stein got more votes in Berkeley, California than Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton won 90% of the vote, while Jill, the troublemaker Stein, received 4.6% of the vote in Berkeley, while Trump got only 3.2% of the vote in Berkeley. So Berkeley has the lowest Trump vote in the nation among cities with populations over 100,000. Not so oddly, Detroit had the fewest amount of votes for Trump, giving him only 3.1% of the vote to Clinton's 95%. And you know why Detroit has the lowest vote for Trump? Muslims. Muslim immigration. Detroit, you know that. So now let's look at the 66,000 arrest warrants thrown out for life, quality of life crimes in San Francisco. Then look at the people who didn't vote for him. The Savage Theorem is simple. In other words, let's make it simple. The higher the liberal quotient, the higher the LQ, the more crime, bums, and feces on the streets. Now, if I said that and it weren't true, it would be offensive. But since I said it and it is true, it might be offensive, but it's also true. So if the truth offends you, it's too bad. What can I say to you? Here's another article related to it. Trump's victory jolts Bay Area minority communities. Oh, boo-hoo. Why is it jolting them? What do you mean Trump's victory jolts them? Muslim, and then they show Muslim, of course, like they represent all of America now. Muslim American somebody with his daughter is worried about a Donald Trump presidency and prays with his son. Isn't that nice? They're the only ones who pray. And he's afraid that they're going to kill us. The words crushed him and left him stunned. He had to put his child to bed, holding him, saying, Dad will make sure you're okay, said the father. And then the father said, the climate doesn't seem as peaceful as what you'd want for them. It's not the America I grew up. Oh, you get the whole story. But the fact of the matter is, didn't we have a terrorist attack just the other day from a peace-loving Muslim? Oh, you forgot about it? The story that was not covered by the San Francisco newspapers? The story about the peaceful Muslim who drove his car into a crowd of students and then jumped out with a knife to start stabbing them? And only because this bigoted, psychotic immigrant was stopped by a cop who shot him dead? Were other children not stabbed by this bum? So which way does the bigotry run? I'm asking you a question. We hear all the time about Islamophobia. How about Americophobia? How about Americophobia from these wonderful immigrants who hate this country? I'm sick and tired of hearing this upside down, backwards reflection of this great nation. I am the son of an immigrant. And when my people came here, they didn't come here to stab people in the street and jump the curb with a car, run them over. So don't tell me everybody's innocent and everybody's going to be picked on.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I didn't get to Fidel Castro's mass murder. I tried to cover it, but I didn't do a sufficient job. He killed 15,000 people, according to David P. Goldman, who was one of the finest columnists the world has ever seen. He used to write under a pseudonym, but he came out of the closet and put his real name on his articles, and they're just as good. I forget what he used to call himself. I don't remember. But David Goldman said that Castro shed blood on a scale unimaginable in American terms. Castro's butchers executed 15,000 prisoners, according to academic estimates cited by Wikipedia. And he's going to go into the details to show you what that actually means per capita-wise in the United States of America. Remember, 15,000 deaths by this murderer, Castro, in a country of 7 million in Cuba, is equivalent to about 680,000 executions in the United States of America with our population of 318 million. Did you hear what I just said to you? 680,000 would be the equivalent of the people killed. Now, of course, your friends, Stalin, Hitler, Mao, and Pol Pot, killed more people in relative terms. But he says that after that, it's hard to find a tyrant with a larger body count than Fidel Castro. So why then did everyone at CNN and MSNBC and NBC and even the White House not speak of him in anything but sort of glowing terms? The answer is because had they won the election, we would be on the road to a police state and executions in this nation as sure as I'm standing here. And I want to talk more about Trump's victory and what it really means. You know I'm dissatisfied with some of his appointments. That's no secret. But overall, we have been liberated from a tyranny that surely would have put all of us in a psychological noose. The country's gone on brain dead vibe. The election's over. I knew this would happen. I gave you six topics. Obama says don't blame Islam after latest terror attack. I tell you about the 15,000 that Castro murdered, even though he was lauded by Wolf Blitzer's boys. I talk about Pelosi and the ultra-Prague agenda of the Dems. I tell you more white people are dying than being born in 17 states. I tell you that the CIA director, Brennan, an Islamophile, says tearing up the Iran nuke deal would be a disaster. Who would it be a disaster? For them? Not for us? And Trump was elected to make sure that these little Nazis inside the universities, these, quote, diversity Nazis, are no longer given positions, that they're purged from the campuses so that students can learn instead of being intimidated by them. That's the opening to my show. If you've got anything to add, it better be good because you're not going to get on. But there's some other topics I want to talk about. Pelosi and the ultra-progressive agenda of the Democrats. Of course, she staved off the rebellion against her, as you would expect from someone who rules with an iron heel. More white people are dying than being born in 17 states. That should please many of you. And Mr. Brennan of the CIA, the outgoing director of the CIA, let's hope he takes a job with Obama somewhere. Brennan says tearing up the Iran nuke deal would be a disaster. He gave it the interview, of course, with the BBC. Which is, of course, I keep saying, of course, you don't know. The BBC is the equivalent of the Communist Front in Britain. The BBC is the voice of communism in Britain. That's what the BBC is. You say BBC, so you think of voices from World War II that kept the British spirits up against the Nazis. No, it's the opposite. It attacks the British people and the British spirit on a daily basis. It's been penetrated the same way our ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox News and MSNBC have been taken over by the same forces of insanity and anti-Americanism, the very forces that we voted against in this last election. The diversity officer at Ohio State, diversity. Imagine what a diversity officer does. What does a diversity officer do? The KGB in the ex-Soviet Union used to have what they called political officers throughout the Soviet Union. The political officers would also be seen on ships in the Navy. In every division, in every area of the military, there was a political officer who made certain that every soldier, sailor, and airman in the Soviet Union was true to the Communist Manifesto. They were the equivalent of our diversity officers in the United States of America. So this moron, this dumb idiot, who you could see at PJ Media, which I linked up on my website and my Facebook, OSU diversity officer urges compassion for Somali Muslim terrorists to attack students. And there's a picture of her in all of her dumbness. The Ohio State University Assistant Director of Residence Life, what does that mean? Expressed sympathy for Somali stabber Abdul Razak Ali Artan in a bizarre Facebook post Monday. Stephanie Clemens Thompson urged her followers to have compassion for Artan after he expressed a desire to kill a billion infidels, and then he tried to kill as many as he could at OSU. She also urged people to, quote, think of the pain he must have been in, and use the hashtags #BlackLivesMatter and #SayHisName, which BLM uses to denote victims of police brutality. Why is she still at this campus? Why? Why do we have such idiots on college campuses? You see, if the hero officer, Alan Horujko, H-O-R-U-J-K-O, he's the hero, had not been able to quickly take down the Muslim terrorist, Artan, the terrorist could have ended up killing many people rather than only sending 10 of them to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. You know what that means? Have you ever poked your finger with a little nothing, how long it hurts you? You ever get a little splinter in your finger, it hurts for weeks? You know what it's like to be cut by somebody? What do you mean non-life-threatening injuries? For life, they're going to be in pain, psychologically, if not physically. So why would this person consider shooting him an example of police brutality against a minority? Because to her, race trumps sanity. Her race trumps everything else in her life. My friends, this is why Trump was elected. Trump was elected to make sure that the future Abdul Razak Ali Artans do not come into the country. Trump was elected to make sure that all the Abduls laying here in wait to cut your throat are found out by the new FBI and thrown out of the country. So we have a terror attack again. Once again, another Muslim goes crazy, commits mayhem. And immediately his spokesmouth, Josh Ernst, who should be tried before a tribunal of the people, when Trump becomes president, Josh Ernst should be tried for war crimes, in my opinion, for having lied continuously through his teeth. That's the spokesmouth for Obama. And he lectures us that we shouldn't draw conclusions about Islam, even though the OSU terrorist, the Ohio State University terrorist, was a Muslim, screamed Allahu Akbar, had sympathies for, was a terrorist, did it in the name of Islam, did it because he was brainwashed by his imam, no doubt, in his mosque, and we're supposed to sit here and shut our mouths. We're supposed to not see reality. We're supposed to deny reality because of the psychosis that has been put across the American landscape by Obama, who has to be, as I've said 1,000 times, and perhaps you'll pick it up correctly this time, he is not an Islamist, Obama. He is an Islamophile. Do you know what an Islamophile is? It's the opposite of an Islamophobe. The current director of the CIA would be an Islamophile, where you can he sees nothing wrong with Islam, even though many Muslims today who are, and I'm sorry to use the phrase, modern or liberal in the interpretation of their own religion, reformist-minded, are saying it is Islam itself that is causing terrorism. I'm not alone in this. Muslims who have any education understand that if you practice a religion and you read a book based upon the 9th or 7th century and you continue to interpret it literally, you'll wind up cutting everyone's throat, blowing things up and killing children. So they're calling for reform. So right away, the White House warns against blaming religion of Islam after Ohio State attack. And to show you how my theory that liberalism is a mental disorder is 100% true, and every day there's proof of it. One of the professors who was injured by the Muslim at Ohio State won't judge the assailant out of respect. An Ohio State University professor injured in the attack by a Somali Muslim man Monday told reporters it's too early to hold judgment on the assailant who was shot and killed by police. He said, I can't read what he said. You know, sometimes if you read the statements of deranged people, it actually screws you up. He's stupid. He's crazy. Here's something he said. Before I pass judgment on this young man. Now, here's a guy injured by the Muslim. So before I pass judgment on this young man, I would like to see exactly what the circumstances are and exactly why he took the course of action that he chose to. I'm going home this afternoon, said the injured prof, and he's dead. So I think my sense is out of respect, just for the living and the dead, that we should wait until we know exactly what the truth is. Police are looking into whether the attack, which sent 11 students to the hospital after they were either hit by the Muslim's car and or stabbed by the Somali Muslim, is related to terrorism. Now, my friends, how many years have I told you liberalism is a mental disorder? Many. How many years have I told you that one of the primary theories of liberalism, which started way back in the 70s, was, if you remember this, it started with don't be judgmental. Remember? If you ever criticized anyone who was doing something crazy, stupid, perverted, or wrong, they would say to you with a sneer, especially in the San Francisco area, don't be judgmental. Don't be judgmental. Don't be judgmental. Don't be judgmental. You ever hear that one? Why is it liberals don't want to judge anyone? Dot, 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 except those whose politics don't conform with theirs. Well, they don't judge anyone. Are you kidding me? Of course they judge everybody. Anyone who's a communist, a socialist, or a fellow traveler is not judged by them except to be good. Well, you get the rest of the story. So terrible violence perpetrated on innocent people is not to be judged by the college professor. Why? Because the perpetrator may be, well, maybe had a proper noble cause based upon his religious teachings. White House now warns against blaming religion of Islam after Ohio State attack. And so the war criminal, in my opinion, Josh Ernst, the spokesmouth, a Goebbels of Obama, the Goebbels of Obama, gets up and gives this speech in clip one. Listen to it yourself.
What's also true, and what we also know based on some of the information about this perpetrator that has been made public.
Perpetrator.
Is that our response to this situation matters. And I don't mean our response as a government.
Matters.
I mean our response as a country to this situation matters. And if we respond to this situation by casting aspersions on millions of people that adhere to a particular religion, or if we increase our suspicion of people who practice a particular religion,
moron,
we're more likely to contribute to acts of violence than we are to prevent.
So in other words, when the Nazis were throwing people into gas chambers, if you cast aspersions on any Nazi who did it, you were going to encourage more people to throw people into ovens? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Do you understand what denial and insanity is? You just heard the voice of an insane man. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. All right, so there's a political story now and again. There was a good political story, having touched on that topic, that the U.S. attorney was kept on by Trump, even though he's a Democrat, Preet Bharara. He's a hero of mine. Preet Bharara is the real McCoy. It wouldn't matter to me whether he was a libertarian. I wouldn't care if Preet Bharara had been a Green Party member. Preet Bharara did the right thing. He brought down some of the most corrupt individuals in New York State, namely Sheldon Silver, and that's just the beginning. But this guy did his job. All right, so we read that he dined with... did he dine? Preet Bharara didn't dine. I think he's a Hindu. I don't know. Do they dine in Hindu? I go to Indian restaurants. I see Indian families dining. Bharara accepts Trump's offer to stay on as U.S. attorney. That's good news. So the idiots are out there already with the cameras clicking. Every camera in the city. Click, 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 click. What did they? What's the picture? Well, what's the story? Moron. Click. They took a picture. He took it. Kept the job. He should. He's a great U.S. attorney. The rest of them have to go across America. San Francisco, we don't have one. We don't have a U.S. attorney here in San Francisco that I know of. I haven't seen him. He did nothing yet. He was handpicked by Barbara Boxer. That should tell you all you need to know. We need a Preet Bharara here. If ever we had a Preet Bharara in San Francisco as the U.S. attorney, half the politicians would be fleeing the country. New York Times. What else? A revolutionary who defied the U.S. and held Cuba in his thrall, say the editors of the New York Times. I only wish that in their lifetime they don't suffer what the Cuban people suffered under this monster, this dictator, this tyrant, this killer. A man that only Robert De Niro could respect. All right, look, I'm giving you the gishkai here. In this holy season, we must not forget our Hindu brethren, who, although they do not celebrate the holidays of the West, are nevertheless generally good guys. They don't blow things up. They don't come here to kill. They come here to, like, build a life for them. How is it so different? Ethnically, they look the same, but they're totally different. Why is it that Hindus come to a country and build a life for themselves? They hear 3 months their children win spelling bees, while folks just across the old river there come over right away, they're blowing things up and killing and knifing. Why is that? You look into it. Don't bother me with it. I figured it out a long time ago. Thank God Pelosi won the insurrection. A, she's good for radio. B, she'll continue to run the Democrats off the rails because of her mania for power, her idiocy. Pelosi prevails. So the Young Turks try to have a new voice to represent the working man, the working woman. But no, not her. This is a woman who glorified whippings at gay parades. This is a woman who glorifies the very same things that destroyed Hillary. LGBT, people of color, immigrants. Remember, she washed the feet of immigrants. Black Lives Matter. You name the radical leftist issue, Pelosi was right in front of it. It really worked well for the Democrats. So a number of Democrats from the states that have been hollowed out by these policies have said it's time for change so we can talk to the working person. No, not her. No, the maniac loves the power. Why? Because absolute power corrupts absolutely. Pelosi fends off challenge to leadership. I think that's wonderful. She won 68% of the Dems. So nobody can loosen Pelosi's iron grip on a progressive liberal heavy group. No one can get her out of there. She's a maniac. How old is she now? 80, 89? That shouldn't disqualify her, but she's whatever. You know that she's a loser. A loser destroyed the Democrat Party. She's talking about nothing to do with what the American people want. Again, the same thing over and over and over and over again. A global warming of which she knows nothing about. The woman never took a science class. LGBT, right? Black Lives Matter, police brutality. I can't even remember the list. That's all she can think about. And then she has the nerve as an Italian grandmother to appear in a leather parade where gay people beat each other up with whips in the street naked and calls it part of her values. And she wonders why the Democrats went down in flames. So good. I'm really happy for this. This is terrific. It guarantees 8 years of Trump for sure.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and I'm focusing today on the cruelty of whaling. Whales are the largest animals on the planet, which means killing them is very, very hard. The practice of whale hunting is one of unimaginable cruelty. They are also social animals. They know when they're being killed. And their friends in the pod know when their mother is being killed and pulled apart by the vermin from Norway. The vermin, the filth from Japan, the lowest form of humanity, are these whalers. They're the last remnant of a Neanderthal past. They're worse than ISIS. They're worse than ISIS because the whales have no guns. The whales have no way to protect themselves. They're some of the most gentle creatures on the planet. You ask people to go on whale watching, and you understand, like, people go in California to Mexico to watch whale watching, where they know that they're safe because the vermin from Japan can't kill them off the coast of Mexico. The lowlifes from Russia can't kill them off Mexico. The Norwegian lowlife homicidal maniacs can't kill whales down there in Mexico. So the whales have become friendly. And they come up to the tour boats and they actually rub their backs on the keel of the boats. And they pull up next to the boats and they open their big eye the size of a saucer. And they look in the eyes of the people looking at them because they're social animals. And they love human beings. And then we reward them for this love and this trust by butchering them in the most horrendous way you could ever imagine. We have to stop the cruelty of killing these animals. The demand for whale meat is falling, but still there are throwbacks in Japan who love it. And despite bans on commercial whaling that have been accepted by most countries, the evil throwbacks in Japan, Norway, and Iceland kill 2,000 whales between them each year and continue to trade in whale products, and I'm going to try and stop it. I was a very active protector of medicinal plants in rainforests for many years. I devoted my whole life to it at great cost to my family. It all worked out in the long run. But I could have been investing in real estate in Harlem in the years that I was trekking in the jungles of the South Pacific saving plants in rainforests. Oh, yeah, I could have invested in cheap real estate in Manhattan and been a big shot. I could have had a tower probably if I wanted it. But I've done well enough anyway. God has rewarded me because I followed what was right. Well, now I've decided what I'm going to do with whatever time I have left on this earth. I'm going to now focus all my attention on protecting the innocent whales, the innocent elephants, the innocent bears, and all of the other innocent creatures that are being butchered in the most inhumane way you could ever imagine. Are you a conservative and you're going to laugh at this and tell me you eat hamburgers and it doesn't matter? Well, my friends, think very carefully because you are the whale. the environment is considered a laughingstock to most doctrinaire conservatives. Knee-jerk conservatives think that anyone who tries to save the environment is an environmental wacko, a commie. This is the opinion that passes for intelligent discourse, when in fact it's our job as keepers of the planet, as shepherds of the planet, to protect the planet and all of its inhabitants, humans included, but not excluding the great animals such as whales, bears, tigers, rhinos, you get the picture, elephants. One of the reasons that conservatives have turned off from the environmental issues is because the environmental movement has largely been taken over by communists who call themselves progressives, and they've used scare tactics and threats and whatnot to beat anyone up who doesn't agree with their flawed conclusions. Now, to turn this into a political show for a moment, President Trump, or incoming President Trump, has just appointed the president of ExxonMobil to be Secretary of State. He has enormous power. The Secretary of State, Mr. Tillerson, is number one in Eagle Scout. That's the first thing I'm going to tell you about him, if you look up his history. That's very important that you understand why that's important. Eagle Scout, that means he's been in touch with the Earth. He knows something more about the Earth than the average doctrinaire, knee-jerk conservative who rarely steps outside of his own comfort zone, either the radio studio or a bulletproof house with bodyguards. So Tillerson has done, you know, his share of investigating the Earth. He is probably a warmist to some extent, and you're going to hear more about this from the Trump campaign. I can guarantee you, as I stand here, the meetings with Al Gore by Ivanka, the appointment of Tillerson, you can guarantee, almost guarantee, what's coming is going to shock many of you. But Trump is going to come out and say that, yeah, there is warming, but they're going to play it both ways. They're going to whipsaw you. They're going to say, just like ExxonMobil did, yes, there is evidence of man-made global warming here and there, but we don't believe in carbon credits. Okay, good. Now, having told you what's coming, I'm going to give you some scientific evidence on some of these issues to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that there's almost nothing we can do to stop the trend towards a warming trend, because there is no warming trend. In fact, there's a cooling trend, but you don't want to scare people with that one. I want to talk about the evidence to the contrary of that presented by the great, great PhD scientist Leon DiCaprio in Trump Tower a few weeks ago. We know that Leon DiCaprio, in between acting the role of playboy or drug dealer or murderer, all around bad boy, somehow earned his doctorate somewhere along the way, we suppose, and he's an expert on global warming. In between flying on his Gulfstream and being on his yacht, he became an expert on global warming in between the girls and the yachts. But I think Leo may benefit from the actual science. Many of you have read Government Zero, my book before Scorched Earth. And if you read that, you know what I'm going to be talking about. It's a piece of evidence that must be included in any and all discussions about so-called man-made global warming, Vostok ice core samples. I want to come back to the big issue of the environment, liberals and conservatives, and how we speak different languages on this. First of all, the important thing for you to know is that we on the conservative side of the band should own the environment. We should own the environmental issue. We shouldn't have let the Marxists take control of this issue with the scare tactics that have frankly hit them in the face. Because other than the academics and the businessmen who make a fortune off the global green mafia, very few people believe any of the statements that are being made, because they've been making statements that are untrue. We all know that the evidence has been skewed, lied about, made up. The hockey stick data, for example, it's shown to be completely fraudulent. Does that mean that we as conservatives should just walk away from the whole issue and laugh about it and go about eating our cheeseburgers and say anyone who wants to save the trees or save the air or save the waters or save the elephants or save the whales is a commie wacko? Well, do so at your own risk of being a moron. If you want to think like a Neanderthal from another era, go ahead. But you see, I own the environmental issue. There is no one else in talk radio, nobody else in talk radio, who has my credentials to talk about it. And instead of hiding my background, why should I hide what I'm proud of? Why should I hide what I've labored so hard the fields I've labored so hard in. First of all, without boasting too much, just a little bit, my plant collections, my botanical collections, are in 7 museums around the world, including a museum in London that I cannot visit, owing to the communists who run England. But put that aside, my plant collections are in Russia. Oh yeah, that means I'm a Russian spy. But my plant collections are also in the Bronx Botanical Gardens, the Bishop Museum in Honolulu, and many other places. The point is that 7 different collections of my plant collections are in different museums. Now, why is that important? Because if you're a plant collector, and you're close to the earth, and you observe botanical species over a long period of time, and you compare them with past samples of these botanical species, you get to see certain things. Well, I've seen certain things and drawn certain observations. So I've worked in the environmental field going way back into the 1970s. In fact, one of my earliest and most popular books was called Plant a Tree, a plan for regreening America. I worked on that for 3 years, and I went city to city, state to state, and came up with plans for regreening America, because I was like a Johnny Appleseed at that time. So I've been deeply involved in this. I've saved portions of little rainforests here and there. So it's important you know that this is not a Johnny-come-lately thing. And I'm putting myself out front on this because you're going to notice a change in me in 2017. I'm not just going to sit here and read websites, gossip from the websites on the internet, and turn it into radio shows. That's over. How much can you take of that? You can do it yourself. That's called talk radio by the numbers. It's a John Nagy radio show. Read a headline, make believe you wrote it, ask the people who are listening what they think about it, and go brush your teeth while they're answering you. We've all done it. It's time to put it behind us, and let's do something meaningful with the power of the broadcast world that we live in. And so, as I say, today we're going to focus on our great, great creatures, the cetaceans, the whales. Why is it important for us to save the whales? Why do you give a darn about a whale? Why do you care about that? Well, if you studied ecology many years ago, you came to understand that we're all part of a large ecosystem. Whether you know it or not, even if you live in an insulated world of your own making, you're part of a larger ecosystem. You as a man, you as a woman, you're part of a large harmonium of living creatures. The earth itself is a living organism. And so when you come to understand what deep ecology actually means, you understand that if you poison the earth for whatever the reason may be, and you crack the eggshell of an eagle, and the eagle can no longer reproduce, you are the eagle. While the eagle starts to die off and you don't care about it because you're not an eagle, you realize that one day you'll be poisoned by the same poison that was used to poison the earth that made the eggs too thin for eagles to hatch. And so that's what we mean by deep ecology. So that brings us back to the whales. Why do we permit in the year 2016 these throwbacks from Japan, from Russia, from Norway, from Finland to kill these magnificent creatures, which have almost been hunted to extinction? Why does anyone on this earth need to kill a whale? There is no reason for it. It's pure, unadulterated throwback behavior. Now, it ties into the Trump campaign in many different ways. Trump, again, I will repeat again, has just appointed Mr. Tillerson to be Secretary of State. Mr. Tillerson is a former Eagle Scout, but more importantly, he is the chairman and CEO of Mobil Exxon, which has business interests drilling all over the planet. Mr. Tillerson has gone on record as a spokesman for Mobil Exxon, saying that he does believe there's evidence of global warming, but, and the big but is whatever he wants to make it into be. That's a very clever way of triangulating the opposition, is that you throw them a bone, you say that their positions have validity, but then you undermine them by not doing anything about it. I understand that. Look, if I thought that we could stop a trend towards warming or cooling as human beings, I would say it. The evidence does not support that, not at all. Does that mean I love pollution? I hate it. There is no man on earth who hates air pollution more than I do. I've run all over the globe to get away from pollution. I remember when I lived in Queens, New York when I was young. I remember when I lived in Forest Hills, New York before I left Forest Hills, New York. I left because the air was polluted. I couldn't stand it. Why was the air polluted in Queens at the time? Because they had no environmental laws to stop people from burning garbage in the incinerators in the apartment buildings in Queens, New York.
And so you'd wake up to this horrendous soot that was falling all over the street, which you were inhaling. And I knew that if I stayed there, I would be sick. I would die a premature death, and I left for more pristine lands. Well, where are we today with regard to environmental regulations? Where are we today? Have we gone too far? Have we gone far enough? Do we actually understand this? And where will Trump go with this? I would think that he's going to move radically in directions you'll never, ever believe. He's going to embrace the Al Gore view of global warming. That's why he had Al Gore in the tower. That's why he had Leon DiCaprio in the tower. He's going to push the big lie. And then he's going to back off and say this or that and not do anything about it. That's going to be the game that's being played. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, I know it's a little unusual for the Savage Nation, but you know what? Hey, it's long overdue. Welcome back to the program. We're talking about saving the whales. How do you like that? Isn't that a laugh line for all of you tough conservatives sitting there eating hamburgers somewhere in the safety of your own home? Maybe even smoking a cigar and laughing at the tree huggers and the environmental wackos. Well, I am a tree hugger and an environmental wacko, and I've been so my entire life. And I'm also a pretty good conservative politically. And so we're talking about saving the whales. Why should you do it? Now, what's interesting to me is that when you study a little bit more about this, you find out that while the Japanese are killing a high number of whales, the number one, the global leader in whale hunting is Norway. Did you know that? It's the Norwegians who are killing more than any other country. But the reason Japan receives the most criticism is because Japan has decided to continue whaling in the Southern Ocean. Japan is the only country to kill whales in international waters of the Southern Ocean, which was, by the way, declared a sanctuary for whales in 1994. Just so you know all of this. Boy, I wish to God that I could tell all of this to Donald Trump. Maybe I could reach him. God only knows. I am going to try to do everything I can to make certain that fewer whales are killed in the coming years rather than more whales are killed, because people probably think that since Mr. Trump is a conservative, all environmental regulations will be lifted and things of this nature will get worse. I'm not so sure of that. And I'm doing a show like this to awaken a largely, I would say, conservative audience to this horrendous travesty of killing whales, because as I said at the beginning of the show, we are the whale. They don't seem to understand the connection in the ecosystem between the whale and themselves, between the eagle and themselves, and I try to explain it as such. If you poison the environment with toxic chemicals, and then the eagle cannot hatch eggs because the shells are too thin, it is not just the eagle that is dying, it's the man. Man is also dying because we're all part of the same ecosystem. Now, I've touched on this subject in the past, never went into it in any great detail, and we're going to talk about some very brave people who run a ship called the Sea Shepherd, and they try to stop the evil Japanese fishermen and the Norwegian fishermen and the Russian fishermen from killing these magnificent creatures. And I admire them. I admire them enormously. We're going to have the man who created the Sea Shepherd program on the program at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk with him about whether they actually can save whales, what you can do to help save the whales. And I think I've touched a lot of people today in a different way, because we need to get away from the normal political humdrum that we've all been trapped in for over a year now. And perhaps we could do some good on talk radio.
Savage.
Just kill him. Kill him. Be a good conservative. Smoke a cigar, drink your scotch, and laugh at anyone who wants to save the animals. Because you're a strong man sitting there in your chair with your fat behind. No, laugh at anyone who wants to save the whales. Call them environmental wackos. Make yourself feel strong and tough. Well, slaughtering wildlife is one thing. Hunting for food is another thing. But conserving what is not yours to kill is quite another. protecting ecosystems and species means you're protecting yourself, by the way. I've tried to explain to you by safeguarding the biodiversity of our balanced ocean ecosystems, including the whale, you are protecting yourself and your children. That's a hard thing for the average lunkhead to understand. But when you poison one part of the ecosystem, you poison it all. That's going to take some knowledge to get to that point. Joining us right now is Paul Watson, who actually was an original founder of Greenpeace. He then went off and created the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Mr. Watson, welcome to the Savage Nation. Let's see, where do we begin? You were an original founder of Greenpeace. You then went off and created Sea Shepherd. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I left in 1977, nearly 40 years ago, because I just felt that I didn't want to be a protester. I mean, we have all the laws and rules and regulations we need to protect wildlife and habitats, but they're not being enforced. So I set Sea Shepherd up as an anti-poaching organization or an interventionist group, not a protest group.
Well, I've done a lot. I've given some funding to the anti-poaching people, and it's heartbreaking to see what they do to elephants in Africa. I watched a video the other night of your work, the Sea Shepherd people, trying to stop the Japanese whalers in the Antarctic. Can you tell us something about that program?
Well, the Japanese were ordered to stop killing whales way back in 87 when the worldwide commercial moratorium on whaling came in, but they continued. And a couple of years ago, Australia took them to court, and the International Court of Justice ruled that their whaling was illegal. The Australian federal court ruled that their whaling in Australian Antarctic waters was illegal, fined them $1 million, which they refused to pay. And the International Whaling Commission has said what they're doing is illegal. But nobody's actually taken any action to stop them. So that's why Sea Shepherd has been intervening, and quite successfully, to stop their program. And
you guys actually, you have steel ships that must cost a fortune to operate with full crews. Your budget must be very, very stretched, very thin. When you come upon Japanese or other whalers killing these animals, what do you actually do?
The main way to stop them from killing whales is to prevent them from loading dead whales onto the factory ship. And to do that, we block their stern slipway. If they can't load them, they can't kill them. And it's been quite a successful tactic over the years.
Do they fire guns at you?
Oh, yeah. We get shot at. We get concussion grenades thrown at us. They ram our vessels. They try to prop pile us. I was struck with a bullet in 2007, but I had a bulletproof vest on. It gets quite violent. But I'm proud to say that we've never caused an injury, and we haven't sustained any serious injuries either.
But Paul, you're at war. You're at war with people who are flaunting international law, flaunting the humanity that any human being can understand. Why is it that the Australian government, for example, if it's in Australian Antarctic waters, have you requested the assistance of Australian naval frigates, for example?
Well, not only have we requested it, but most people in Australia have requested it too, but neither Australia nor New Zealand are intervening. They are very concerned about poachers, they say, but they don't actually do anything about it, and it's been really a mystery. When they were taken to court, they were taken to by a previous government. Now the new government that comes in there, they give lip service to the fact that they're opposed to what Japan's doing, but they actually don't take any actions to stop it. So,
well, what is it? It's all lobbyists again. We're talking about the whales. So let's go into the water with you. You're a founder of this great operation, Sea Shepherd. You're all brave people, the men and women on that ship. I mean, you are putting your lives on the line. You could be doing other things to make a living, but you're so committed to saving these magnificent creatures that you go out there. And you have the law on your side, but the vicious, vicious people who are poaching the animals could care less. When you pull a ship up, let's put it this way. How many whales do you think you've actually saved this year? Any?
Well, since 2005, about 6,500 is how many we've prevented them from taking in their quotas.
How do you know that for a fact, Paul? I'm not doubting you. I'm just curious.
Well, they set the quota every year, 1,035, up until last year, then they were forced to lower it. But so we take their quota, and we see what they get, and the ones that they don't get are the ones we save. We prevented them from taking them. So some years they got 30% of their quota, and one year they got only 10% of their quota.
Okay, how can... we know we can help you. I'm going to give out your email, your website and all. I'm going to want people to donate money directly to you. I'm not looking to collect the money and give it to you. I want direct action to support Sea Shepherd. How many people do you have on each ship?
We right now have about 150 volunteers on the 8 different vessels, and they're involved in different campaigns. There's 2 of them that are down in the Southern Ocean that are operated by Sea Shepherd Global. We have 2 vessels in the Sea of Cortez working to protect the endangered vaquita, and we're doing that in partnership with the Mexican Navy. We're working with the Gabonese government to stop overfishing in their waters. We have 1 in the Mediterranean working with the Sicilian police to stop poachers there. So it's a worldwide operation. There's 150 or so volunteers right now on the ships are from 25 different nations.
Hmm. Do you have what's your annual budget for the Sea Shepherd program?
About $12 million. It's much, much smaller than, for instance, Greenpeace's $375 million. But, you know, we couldn't do what we do unless we had the passion and the dedication of the volunteers who were on our
team. Well, I'm right. That's why I have you on the show, because I've seen movies of you, videos of you guys. You're out there. You're not just putting out press releases and going to dinner with the senators. You're actually stopping these bastards from killing the animals.
Yes, and it is risky. For instance, Japan has a lot of economic power, and that's how they're able to get away with this. I mean, like Namibia couldn't do this, but Japan does it. And, for instance, one of the things they've done is they placed me on the Interpol red list, which have me extradited to Japan for the crime of conspiracy to board a whaling ship.
Oh, my God, that's awful. So you're on the wanted list for Interpol?
Yes, and the interesting thing about it is that nobody in the history of Interpol has ever been put on that list for that kind of a crime. It's for war criminals and serial killers. I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't steal anything. I didn't damage anything. The charge is conspiracy, and that just goes to show you how much power Japan has. But it didn't stop us because, you know, the ships go down there. There's many captains and the crews are from all over. So the ships.
Have you ever lost a ship, Paul? Have they actually rammed your ship and damaged it so the ships don't operate?
A vessel that was working with us, the Audie Gill, was deliberately rammed and split in half in 2012. 2010, and that was a total loss. They had to pay in the U.S. courts. They took them to court. They had to pay $2 million for that loss. But that's the only that one that was destroyed.
Paul, what kind of money is involved in this hunting of whales? Why do they do it? There are other ways to fill the needs of whale meat or blubber or oil. Why are they doing this?
Well, they actually don't do it for money. It's heavily subsidized. In fact, they even took $30 million from the Tsunami Relief Fund to give to the whaling companies. The reason it's being done is that in Japan, when politicians retire, they're given nice, cushy jobs in these government enterprises, and whaling's one of them. And they won't end whaling because these guys will lose their jobs. And the union that supplies the workers is run by the Yakuza. So that's the reason it continues to operate. But it doesn't make money. It hasn't made money. They've got 6,000 tons of whale meat in frozen warehouses right now that they can't sell. There's no market for it.
Yeah, that's another question. Have the Japanese people become enlightened enough to stop eating the meat of dead whales?
There never really was that much of a demand for it. I'd say about 1% of the population, when you poll them, have even tried it. So it's really being done as a subsidy for the industry.
What kind of men do they use to go hunt these magnificent creatures? Where do they dredge them up from? Are these criminals? Who are they?
No, there's traditional whaling towns like Taiji in Japan where they kill the dolphins. And so there's a few towns that have been killing whales for, 100 years. And so they get their workers from there.
Well, just because it's traditional doesn't mean it's sane or humane. And there are many things that are traditional that have been stopped. If you look in the Old Testament, they used to stone adulterers to death. They used to kill homosexuals. We don't do everything that's traditional, and I think that killing animals of this magnitude should be go by the way of the Stone Age mentality in the Old Testament, personally.
It's also critical because the Ainu people, the indigenous people of Japan, they used to go whaling, but they're prohibited by the Japanese government. So that's the actual real traditional culture, and yet the Japanese prohibit that. But they allow this to go on because elite politicians who've retired and are working for this whaling company, which is owned by the Japanese government, they don't want to lose their jobs. And also, there's one other reason. They feel that if they give in on whaling, they'll have to give in on their overfishing of bluefin tuna and other species, which, you know, they're driving slowly into extinction.
Mm-hmm. Let's, for a moment, talk about the realities of the animal itself. These are highly social animals, whales, aren't they?
Very social, very intelligent, and not only that, they're actually essential for the survival of life in our ocean. You know, since 1950, we've seen a 40% diminishment in phytoplankton populations in the ocean. One of the reasons for that is the diminishment of whale populations, because whales are really the farmers of the ocean. It's called the whale pump. They bring up nutrients from the depths and unload them on the surface in the form of their feces. One blue whale every day defecates 3 tons, and that's heavily rich in nitrogen and iron, the essential nutrients for phytoplankton. So it's the whales that keep the phytoplankton alive and thriving. And phytoplankton provides over 70% of the oxygen we breathe. And the reality of it is if phytoplankton goes extinct, we do too.
Wow, that's amazing. But I want to focus on the emotional issues of killing one of these animals. They travel in pods, don't they? I mean, how many animals generally travel together?
Well, there are pods, and some of them are loners, but like, for instance, sperm whales travel in pods. The large whales, like blue whales and fin whales, tend to be loners. But there's various cultures amongst the whales, of course. But, you know, I myself got so involved with this passion about it because back in 1975, a sperm whale could have killed me. That had just been harpooned by the Russians and chose not to do so. And I feel personally indebted to that whale for the fact that I'm still alive.
What do you mean? It looked at you and decided not to kill you in the longboat?
Well, what happened is that we were blocking the harpoons of the Russian whaling fleet. And the Russians fired a harpoon over our head, slammed into the backside of the female in the pod. She screamed and rolled over in a fountain of blood. And suddenly the largest whale slapped the water with his tail, dove and swam underneath of us and hurled himself straight towards the harpooner. But they were waiting for him with another unattached harpoon, point-blank range, hit him in the head. He fell back in the water, screaming, blood everywhere. And as I looked at him, he suddenly saw me. I saw him dive and saw a trail of bloody bubbles coming straight towards us, and he came up and out of the water at an angle so that the next move was to fall right on top of us and crush us. And as I looked up into the eye of that whale, I saw, or I perceived, understanding that the whale understood what we were trying to do, because I could see the effort he made to pull himself back and slide back into the water, and I saw his eye disappear beneath the surface. And he died. And I, you know, my life was saved. But here's the other thing. I said, why? Why were they killing these whales? Because you don't eat sperm whale meat. The Russians were killing them for spermaceti oil, for high heat resistant lubricating oil. And one of the most prized uses for this was for the manufacture and of intercontinental ballistic missiles. So I said,
oh my God.
We are destroying this incredibly beautiful, intelligent creature for the purpose of making a weapon meant for the mass extermination of human beings. And I said, we're ecologically insane. And
yeah.
From that moment on, I said,
well, this is amazing. This is an amazing interview. It's far more involved than I had thought it would be. We're speaking with a man who created the Sea Shepherd Program, a long and rich program to protect animals in the ocean environment, notably the Sea Shepherd Program, as I said to you earlier, and saving the whales and the porpoises is one of their goals. Was speaking with a man who has put his life out there to do this. He didn't do it just for the acclaim or to get an Academy Award. Go to seashepherd.org and make a big donation. I'll be right back with Paul Watson.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or swissamerica.com. Okay, my friends, we're back with Paul Watson, the founder of Sea Shepherd. They've saved thousands of whales from the inhumane slaughter by Japanese and Russian and, I guess, other fishermen. Mr. Watson, are you welcome back to the program here? Can you give out an email or website or Twitter, whatever it is where people can donate money to your organization?
Yes, it's cshepherd.org, O-R-G, cshepherd.org. S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D.
H-E-R-D, it's a hard... Shepherd's a hard word to spell, by the way. You know, I just went on your website, and I see that you launched a new ship in April, the Ocean Warrior, that you had built just to outrun the Japanese whale killers. Where did you build that ship?
It was built by a Dutch company in Turkey the money came from the Dutch Postal Code Lottery. They gave us 9 million euros to build it.
Paul Watson of Sea Shepherd, thank you so much for this time on the Savage Nation. Now, that leads us right back to talking about the benefits of saving the whales and other large creatures. We are talking about the bigger issue of the liberal-conservative dichotomy in environmentalism, because we all think that it's only liberals who are or should be environmentalists, and we turn our noses up at them saying they're all, quote, environmental wackos. But that's not the truth. The truth is we conservatives do, in fact, own the environmental issue, as we just discussed on this program, going back to Teddy Roosevelt, if not before then. And this group does things that are marginally illegal. They cut nets, they block fishermen, they ram whaling vessels. And frankly, I approve of everything that they do.